Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it is Thursday. It is Toy Department time. We should probably mention right off the top of the show that this is the last Toy Department time, not forever by any means, but for a few weeks. We're going on an international break.
Yeah, international break. That's right.
So that Kolsky can play in Europe for a little bit.
I wish.
You're going to Europe. Where are you going?
Costa Rica.
Okay. Yeah. See, that's abroad.
It is abroad. It is international. So you are accurate, and we will be taking the rest of March off. So savor this podcast.
Yeah, but we're gonna throw a crap ton of homework at you.
Yeah, a lot of stuff to do
later on in the show. First episode without a challenge for a while.
Although it's going to be coming back basically by the time we're coming back to the podcast. But yeah, we have a challenge-free episode after this.
Yeah.
After what we've just said.
And we also had one item from the homework, the show Dead Hot, that turns out not at least on these shores.
Yeah, it was Amazon UK only. Disappointing for me. I read some interesting reviews of it. I was excited to check it out, but oh well.
It'll get here eventually.
Yeah, probably.
And we'll talk about it maybe when that happens. But we won't be talking about it today because neither one of us saw it. So where would you like to start among the things that we did see?
Why don't we just talk about the Oscars off the top?
Okay. You know, it's interesting to me because I think Jimmy Kimmel did a pretty good job this year. And that the show was pretty well executed and well paced.
Yep.
And certainly when you look at some of the past Jimmy Kimmel hosting shows, he's been thrown a few challenges that were not his fault in any real way. And this one, none of that, right? It all went smoothly.
Yeah.
And yet it's so smoothly that I found like it was a pretty unmemorable Oscars, at the end of the day.
Wishing for the days of Moonlight and La La Land.
Well, I don't even know if I'm not saying that like, well, God, nobody got slapped this year, so boring Oscars. But like, can you think of, is there one speech that even stands out in your mind a week later?
Maybe Emma Stone.
Yeah, I don't know.
Emma Stone was really overcome and I would say marginally unique in her sort of the way she handled the acceptance speech. But no, I mean, it wasn't, I think you're right. It was a notably chill. I mean, look, I will say this. It was first wins for a lot of people that I think deserve Oscars. Like, all of the acting winners made me pretty happy, even if they weren't the person I necessarily would have given it to.
I didn't want Emma Stone to win.
I know, but you hated the movie, but I think we can agree that...
I did not hate the movie.
You didn't like the movie, but we can agree that Emma Stone's a great actress, right? And like, I don't know. I thought it was... That was a competitive category.
I think we literally talked about it when we were talking about it, that I thought she would win because... Right.
Oh, how'd you do, by the way?
For me, this was a rough year. I think a lot of the 50-50
just went the wrong way.
Calls, I went the wrong way, but I wound up 17 for 23.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad. Very respectable. Very respectable. Yeah, so, I thought, generally speaking, it was like a reasonable and inoffensive Oscars, which maybe doesn't make for the best TV show, but like, I don't think there's a ton to be really upset about. I mean,
and they finally paced it right, I feel like.
Yeah, it all just kind of went well. And, you know, if you think like Emma Stone wasn't the best choice for best actress, and, you know, Lily Gladstone should have won, I'm not going to argue too much with you, but I did think Emma Stone was really good. And it's the sort of role that award shows love, because it's...
Just she got naked.
A lot. No, yeah, but I mean, it's way out there. It's an out there performance.
Great performance. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm kidding a little bit. I don't have a huge problem with Emma Stone winning, you know.
Cillian Murphy was really...
Joyce.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But look, Cillian Murphy was really flipping good. And, you know, any of those supporting actors probably could have won for me. Same with supporting actress. But, like, Davine Joy Randolph is... We've talked about her a lot on this show because of how sort of spectacularly she's exploded onto the scene over the last few years. And I just heard her Marc Maron episode... And she is a fascinating human being. She sort of mentioned in her speech, that actually for me is probably the most memorable, although I understand if it's not for most people. First of all, she was a discus thrower in high school.
The speech.
No. Well, I'll get to the speech. She was a discus thrower who had a full ride offer to, I forget what, but like a big state school, you know, sort of sports school. And also an opera singer, a trained opera singer who was a Juilliard candidate. She went to Juilliard for opera, and excuse me if I'm getting any of the details wrong, but the gist is correct. She went to Juilliard for opera, took an acting course to in theory help her in opera, because she hadn't really been a performer. And the opera people were like, you can't take acting courses if you want to do opera, you're out of here. And so that moment she described where her mom told her to go to the acting school was right after she'd been kicked out of opera and didn't know what to do and was like crying on a street corner to her mother. And her mom was like, well, go to the acting school. They had you in the class and liked you, like go over there. And then she became what we've seen over the last like 3 years, which is tremendous. Just an incredible actress. And she also happens to be a trained opera singer, and she went to Yale grad school for drama as well. She is like a remarkable human being. Gotcha. So I don't know. That made me happy.
She knew about these prep schools a little bit then, if she had some Yale experience.
Yes, she did. And then Downey winning.
I have some more questions about that story, by the way, but I don't think they're ones you can answer.
No, so. I mean, I strongly recommend.
I have to ask Davine Joy Randolph.
I think you should listen to the Maron episode. It's so good. She's so interesting and seems really like a wonderful person. So anyway, I say all that to say I was happy to see her win. I was happy to see Robert Downey Jr. win. Like, he is one of the great actors of my lifetime, and he's done a lot of things that haven't necessarily been Oscar-y things, but he just has been an ever-present joy from an acting perspective for my whole life. Yeah. And it's cool to see him win.
My only beef with that is that, like, there were a ton of really good supporting characters in that movie, and any one of them could have, like, I don't think he was any more special than Matt Damon was in that movie.
No, you know, or Josh Hartnett for that matter. But nevertheless, I'm happy to see him win.
Get his due, damn it.
God damn it. Well, right here on this podcast, he will. That's for sure. And I kind of couldn't believe Christopher Nolan hadn't won before.
That, well, I can believe that because he makes the kind of movie that wins screenplay that everybody loves, but people are going to vote for. And it's like Tarantino has been like that for many years.
I guess.
Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like they're that same kind of director, I feel like.
Maybe, but I don't know. Again, a director who has been seminal in film in my lifetime. Like, I don't know. There is something satisfying about seeing those people win. So overall,
anything of Killers of the Flower Moon being this not being the first Scorsese movie to rack up a ton of nominations and then win nothing?
No, because I think no, I'm not surprised. I think it's with respect to the Academy, it has the unfortunate job of being a movie about an oppressed people in this country. And it's just, even if there's not like overt racism attacking it, keeping it from winning, there is latent racism that like that those a movie like that is going to struggle to get votes. It just is.
Yeah, I guess. It's weird because I feel like we, you know.
And this was a really good year. Like
to honor the legendary performer with work that's not their best. The Al Pacino right. Son of a Woman kind of deal.
Well, you didn't Scorsese win for The Departed?
Did he win for... I forget what he did wind up winning for.
Didn't he win for something?
I guess I'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
Cord Jefferson, I think, was probably my favorite speech of the night.
That was great.
So
really,
I'm glad.
Really satisfying. He won for The Departed. Yeah, he won Best Director for The Departed.
Well, that's actually a legit movie. So
yeah, but I don't know that it's his best work, but it's definitely a great movie. Best,
but I would say it's up there.
Yeah, top five for sure. Yeah. I would say that I probably think both Wolf of Wall Street and Killers of the Flower Moon were superior films, but that's just me. Certainly Goodfellas and Raging Bull I would rank as superior
films. Like Goodfellas is one of those where he didn't I think got a lot of nominations and didn't win anything, right?
He definitely got director and screenplay for that and did not win.
I would say Goodfellas is his best film to me.
Yeah, Raging Bull is so good too. I mean, those are the two. There's there's other good ones.
I mean, Taxi Driver, right?
Didn't get any Oscar noms, I don't think. Let's see, Taxi Driver. No Oscar nominations for Taxi Driver. But yeah, that's up there. Oh, no, it did get Best Picture, but he didn't get any nominations specifically. But yeah, listen, he's made a lot of great movies, and Killers of the Flower Moon was right in that conversation for me. I mean, probably outside of those top two. So it's a bit of a bummer that it didn't win anything, really. I think it won a couple of lesser awards, one or two. But like I said, it was a really good year. And I don't know that I have a huge beef. I take that back. I don't think it won anything. I don't know. I don't have a huge problem with it.
Yeah.
It's a bummer that such a good movie didn't have an opportunity to win. Other than Lily Gladstone, I'm not sure I would have given it anything either.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think you're right. I would have given it, like I said, I would have given Lily Gladstone, but outside of that.
Yeah, and I don't, again, like Lily Gladstone was spectacular. I really thought Emma Stone was great too, so I don't have a huge problem with that. I know you like it less than I do, but overall, if there's a takeaway from this Oscars, I think it's how normal it was.
Yes, this was the normcore Oscars.
Just a really chill, cool Oscars. This Oscars can totally hang, you know?
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to some shows.
Let's.
Can
we talk about the regime?
Sure.
Is this a comedy? Is this a drama? Is it a satire? What? How would you describe this show?
I mean, it's definitely like a spiritual cousin of Succession, right?
Or is a see? Okay. Yes, and is it also a spiritual cousin of Veep?
Yes. Yes.
That's yes. Weird. I don't know what I would have said if someone had been like, okay, Kate Winslet, and it's a spiritual marriage of Veep and Succession.
Well, those two shows do share some sort of creative bond, right? Like, I think Armando Iannucci is some
Succession?
In the extended universe of Succession, I think.
Okay. I don't know if that's true or not. I do know that as television shows, Succession and Veep are extraordinarily different. And the vibe in particular is extraordinarily different. And I am not here to criticize the regime necessarily. But I have to say, the vibe is confusing. Like, sometimes I can't tell if I'm supposed to be laughing or horrified.
Yes, I think that's... I don't know, it seems to be kind of going for that.
Right, which is weird. This is a weird show. It's not what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, totally. And that's the thing is, it's like, I mean, I think... You know, Kate Winslet is doing her part with gusto, and I think the...
I mean, she's doing a whole thing. She's got, like, a weird mouth thing going on. She's got, like, a slight accent and potentially a speech impediment that she's doing. Like, it is... She's doing a lot. And again, not criticizing, but it is weird.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like, you come away from this going, what did I just watch? But I'm not in a way like I think I'm gonna keep watching more, you know. Yep. Like I'm not like this is terrible, but it also is like what's happening.
And I think that feeling puts it in a weird spot, specifically as the like Sunday night HBO deal, right? Because yep. We think of that as like this big prestige spot, and to sit down for that, and at the end of it, I will say at. The end of the first episode, I was like, what the? I got to watch another episode of that. So in that way, that may be a good thing. And certainly this could turn out, depending on where it goes, which I couldn't begin to suggest where it might be going. I think this has like a foundation upon which could be built an incisive drama, a satire, a... out and out absurdist comedy. Like it could go so many different directions. So in a way that's exciting too. Like I guess what I'm talking myself into is that I'm very excited about the regime, but that's not quite how I felt when the two episodes ended. There was a lot more confusion.
Yeah. Just to close the circle, Jesse Armstrong, who made Succession, worked on two shows with Armando Iannucci, okay. The Thick of It, and then the movie In the Loop, which I rather enjoy if you haven't seen.
Very good movie, yeah.
Yep.
Interesting.
So there is a shared vibe in there maybe somewhere, I guess.
There's I can understand a certain shared perspective, but the shows are I think I sufficiently explained my feeling on the vibes. It's just a weird scene. The whole thing's a weird scene.
You know, the other thing that's interesting to me is like you often are not into watching shows about, you know, rich people or super powerful people, right? I feel like.
Maybe. I mean, it's an interesting way to describe my taste. I'm not sure. I think I need time to digest that.
Like, I think sometimes you're like... You know, like with a show like Billions, for example, you're like, fuck these assholes, right?
Yes. Or
Industry, right? That was another one where you were like, I'm out. I don't want to watch a show about these kind of people.
Yeah, I do think, though, I mean, you know, worth noting, I came around to Billions and Industry. My opposition is as much with the like dark British nature of the presentation as anything. So I don't know. But I'm vulnerable to that. And yeah, that wasn't an issue here. She's absurd, right? Like, you immediately understand. The first thing you understand is that she's an absurd character and, like, an absurd dictatorial character.
Yeah. I feel like Trump might like her.
Well, that's right. And if you and I sat in a room with Donald Trump watching this, that, you know, let's suspend disbelief for a minute, and watching him like it, I think we would feel like he is an idiot and missing the point. But also, I'm not sure. So that, like,
he would talk the whole way through, right?
It would be very annoying.
What would we eat in that room?
I don't know, but it would be served on gold plates. I do know that.
And it would probably be like well done steak with ketchup.
Yeah, probably. some Lay's potato chips.
All right. So curious thumbs up.
A curious thumbs up. Maybe curious even two curious thumbs up. Like, I'm pretty here for this, as confused and, like, you know, sort of bamboozled as I am by it.
Yeah. I'd say the same. I don't totally know what to make of it. I don't totally know where it's going, but I'm kind of enjoying the plotting and the scheming and the absurdity of it all.
It is absurd. Speaking of absurd and not knowing what's going on, I think we can confidently say that we know exactly what's going on in all of the other, in both of the other things we watched this week.
Well, all right, let's go to Ricky Stenicki, because that's, I think, pretty straightforward.
Okay.
In terms of what's going on. Nice to get back into the Peter Farrelly universe.
Peter Farrelly film to a T.
Starting to recognize some of the hallmarks after watching three seasons worth of Loud Milk.
Yeah, and honestly, after watching as far back as Dumb and Dumber, like, the ingredients are the same.
Yeah. And everyone here, I think, is pleasant enough. Yep. I enjoyed spending time and working my way through the story. I would have liked this to be funnier than I think it ultimately was. Does that make sense?
If we're talking about, I don't know, like, there were a lot of dumb laughs, you know, as one would expect.
I didn't laugh my belly a ton. You know what I mean?
No, I'm not sure. Maybe I think maybe the better way of saying it is like that. Like, there weren't a lot of deep laughs here. And you know, it is Peter Farrelly. You're not expecting.
Crack me up. You know what I mean?
And right.
It didn't do that. It did not crack me up.
Right.
But I had a good time. It was pleasant. I you know what I mean? I don't regret it.
And there are a lot of funny moments, and largely produced by John Cena. Just really goes for it. Whatever he does,
he's committed to the bit. Much like Ricky Stenicki.
Yeah.
Or Rod, I guess I should say. Much like Rod.
He's sort of the perfect guy for this role. And he's really funny.
Honestly, his act might have been the funniest thing in the whole movie.
Oh my God. Some of those parody songs.
Yeah.
I can just imagine the, like, writer room experience where they're just coming up with parody song titles.
Big masturbation things out of it. Surprisingly about, good job. Like, honestly, they really
they did great.
Yeah.
There were some real surprises in there.
Yep.
Yeah, but I mean, listen, if the idea of laughing at jerking off and, you know, hilarious coincidences for 90 minutes sounds appealing to you, you will have a good time with Ricky Stenicki. It's not Dumb and Dumber, but it is. It's, for me, above, like, if we're talking, you know, Peter Farrelly movies, or just in general, that kind of film where, like, the primary function is stupid laughs. This is pretty handily above the line for me of, like, there's enough here for it to be worth watching.
Yeah. I think also Zac Efron can play that handsome guy.
He's really good.
In a, you know, dirtbag comedy, Bradley Cooper sort of role.
Right, where he's enough of a dirtbag to be involved in this, but you believe that he's a decent guy.
Yes, exactly. Like, yep. Yeah, he can do that in his sleep.
He's great. I mean? Yep, that's definitely his thing. And just in general, some fun other acting appearances here. Andrew Santino of Dave and I'm Dying Up Here. William H. Macy. I don't want to spoil it because it is, to me, one of the funniest jokes in the movie. But the whole arc with William H. Macy and John Cena towards the end of the movie, those were the biggest laughs for me. If there was anything close to a belly laugh, it was that whole bit.
I love it when William H. Macy's game.
He's really spectacular.
Yep.
Especially he's such a particular presence. That the fact that he can do this as easily as he could do Fargo is pretty amazing to me.
Yeah, or Boogie Nights.
Right, you know? Right, yeah.
Like he's quite an actor.
Yeah, so a good time, generally speaking. And if I can force another transition on us, I also had a good time with The Gentlemen. Now, I've only watched, I think, two. Maybe I watched a third. I can't quite remember, but
it's really hard for me to describe how many of this show I've watched, because there were definitely three separate attempts in which I fell asleep in all three, and had to then wake up and try to figure out where I left off on the Netflix, which is always a challenge. But I can confidently say that I've watched two of them in their entire the first okay. two. In their entirety.
So we're in a similar place.
Yeah.
This show, and you tell me if you feel differently, but this show is exactly a Guy Ritchie movie just done for, I don't know how many episodes it's going to end up being, but let's toss it off as 8 hours. And
yeah. It's a series of hour-long Guy Ritchie movies, really. 100%.
Right. I mean, obviously, like, there's a plot that extends beyond that, but it is exactly Guy Ritchie stuff. And I enjoy 2 hours of Guy Ritchie, and I'm not sure I won't enjoy 8 hours of Guy Ritchie. I do think he's made for 2 hours, though, because I have a feeling that the more of this I watch, the more I will lament the lack of anything meaningful from a story or theme perspective.
Yeah, and the small doses and you know help, I think, in terms of putting up with the you know cutesy dialogue and the colorful villains and the crazy situations,
right?
You know,
like,
what I mean?
All that stuff is fun to me in small doses, and maybe that's the ticket. Is it's just not really a binger. It's a watch an hour every few days when you feel like having some fun kind of a thing.
Yeah, maybe fall asleep.
Yeah, and if you fall asleep, no big deal, because like you could pick it right back up. Someone just got shot, and something hilarious happened.
And the Goofy Brothers doing coke again. Yeah.
Yeah, hey, but I mean
I'm awake and plugged in.
right and those it's fall asleepable, but it's not that it's not fun if you're awake.
Yeah, 100%. I there are worse things to me that Guy Ritchie can be doing with his time. I've seen some of them, so
true story.
Yeah so thumbs up on The Gentleman. I think not a enthusiastic thumbs up, but a thumbs up nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, similarly with both of these, Stanicki and The Gentleman, like, you know, they're kind of exactly what you think they're going to be. And if that's something you like, then you'll probably enjoy yourself.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we should get to homework here in a second. But a couple of things. I got a couple of sporty things for you. One, Chelsea versus Arsenal in the Women's Super League tomorrow. Are we trying to do this?
I mean, I think we're going to do our best, but I unfortunately at some point here got the day wrong, and my schedule is a little goofy, but I'm going to try to keep an eye on it at least, and then with any luck, I'll be able to watch the end live.
Oh, that'll be cool. Like kind of a league title there on the line, perhaps. There's another team involved in that race. I think it's Manchester City. Yeah, so.
Yeah. And Man City did beat Chelsea last time out, so we'll see.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I was looking at a list the other day that, it's obviously not an official list, but somebody's ranking of the top 50 women's players in the world. There are only three U.S. players on that list. So
really?
Yeah. I think we, having more players playing over in the European League, what I think would be a good thing. We got a couple.
Most of them are on Chelsea, I think.
Arsenal's got an American. Chelsea's got a couple.
Yeah.
But I think a few more would be good. And then obviously we have a couple playing in France as well. So,
For
the better players of the team, if you notice. Now, if you're watching any of that Women's Gold Cup, the NWSL players are in preseason and the European players are in, midseason form. So you might expect that they're a little bit more prepared.
Fair.
Lindsey Horan looks like the best U.S. player on the field when she steps out there.
That's true. I don't know. To be totally frank, I don't have nearly enough knowledge about the women of the world to have a worthwhile opinion on where the U.S. women should land. Like, I probably know a total of five women soccer players who are not U.S. Soccer players. You know what I mean?
I know a lot of the English players now.
Yeah, a few. I know Lauren James. That's for goddamn sure.
And, I think the top of that list was just basically littered with Barcelona players.
Uh-huh. And I know Sam Kerr. Again, I know the Chelsea players and the U.S. players, so I can't really – it's surprising to me to hear that the U.S. women are not more highly rated, but I can't actually say I have a worthwhile opinion on the subject.
Like, it's hard for me to believe that Mal Swanson's not one of the top 50 players
in
the world.
Does she count? Is she healthy?
Maybe they didn't list her because she was hurt. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, Katarina Macario was pretty high on that list the year before and not on it at all this year because she got hurt. So
she's back now, though, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, come back and score a goal. So we'll see.
It's the Chelsea way on the women's side anyway. You know, you lose your stars and just new goal scorers come out of the woodwork.
Did you see, I guess, Emma Hayes showed the Chelsea players like two slides, which is like one of them winning all the trophies and then another slide that was just blank.
Yes.
She's going to have one or have the other.
Yep. She's she seems like she's exactly what Team USA needs at this moment. It's an exciting time.
You can see her stamp on the team already a little bit with some of those Gold Cup lineups and who was playing and who was not. I think it's going to be really fascinating to see what team they take to the Olympics. So
we'll see.
So, yeah. So we got that going on. And then did I tell you this last week? Somebody gave me tickets to the entirety of the Big Ten men's tournament here.
No, but.
I actually went last night.
I was going to say it's already going, right?
Yeah, the end of the first day session, which was I haven't avidly been following men's college basketball this year. Did you know like Michigan is terrible?
Yes.
Like terrible.
They've been pretty bad since that little run they had where they were in the Final Four. I don't follow it at all.
Yeah, I knew they weren't a ranked team. You know what I mean? But I didn't know they were 8-16 or whatever. It's bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they got waxed by Penn State while I was there.
Well, to be fair, it's never really been a basketball conference.
I guess not. So I'm trying.
I mean, they've had basketball teams, but like, I don't know. I always think of,
I mean, it's like Pac-12, the SEC, Big 12. Right? The SEC has basketball, has some good basketball teams sometimes, but you don't think of it as a basketball conference.
Right. Kentucky is a tremendous tradition. Have national
champions, you know what I mean? Right. Totally. Yeah. And, you know, obviously Florida and Tennessee have been good at various points, you know, but yeah, it's not the same. I'm just trying to decide how much of this tournament I should go to. You know what I mean? Like, how many more games should I try to check out?
I think, like, if it was me, I would just look at the mock drafts and see if anybody in the first round is on any of these teams. Because otherwise, it's not a really watchable sport.
Well, and that's, I thought, I was like, oh, I'll check out Juwan Howard's son. He's supposed to be a dude, right? But no, apparently not.
He's not a dude.
not getting drafted. So,
yeah, you got to check out.
I'll try to watch the Purdue kid. There you go. Obviously. And, you know, see what else is going on out there. The other thing I thought was interesting about the Big Ten thing was they had the women's tournament last week. And that thing was sold out. Downtown was taken over by Iowa fans. I was headed to the pub to watch the Arsenal match and, like, literally lying around the block of people waiting to get in to watch women's basketball.
Well, listen, I mean, Caitlin Clark is one of the, what, 10 biggest sports draws in the country right now.
Like, she's a phenomenon onto her own.
Yeah.
The final of that tournament game almost had the same rating as UNC Duke the night before. And that was played in the middle of the afternoon. So,
yeah, well, it's better. It's better basketball.
Like, I think this could be the year that the women's tournament outrates the men.
It should. It's better basketball with bigger stars. I mean, why wouldn't it at this point?
Yeah.
I can I don't know that I can offhand name a single men's college basketball player right now, but I can name several women.
Name one?
Can you? Oh, is Cooper Flagg there yet? No, he's next year, right?
No, he's next year.
No, I don't think.
Kyle Filipowski from Duke. How's that?
I've heard that name.
So I can name most of the Carolina.
I've heard that name. And if somebody mentioned the kid from, who's the big kids at Purdue, right?
Zach Eddy is his name.
Yeah. Yes. Like, I've heard those names before, but I have not watched them, and it's not enough for me to remember them.
Bronny James is obviously, that's kind of an easy one.
Who?
Bronny James, LeBron James' kid?
Right. I would have been able to name him.
Name a men's college basketball player. He's famous. You know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, they are not star. Other than Bronny, none of those names are, like, star names in American sports landscape right now. Whereas Caitlin Clark.
Draft this year, and it's almost all European players at the top. There are very few.
Yeah. And in the women's side alone, just, like, right off the top of my head, I got Juju, Caitlin, and Angel Reese.
Yeah.
You know? Because they're stars. Like, that's what it is.
Speckers or Maria Brink. Half the South. We didn't name any South Carolina players, did we? Right.
So, like, no. So that's what I'm saying. Like, it's, and I'm good with that because, you know, look, hopefully the WNBA gets there one day. But, like, right now, college basketball is the premier women's basketball, and the NBA is the premier men's basketball. You know, like, I don't need to care about men's college basketball. Yeah. There's not enough time in the day.
Yeah, sadly, I even me who loves men's college basketball above almost anything has reached that point where it's like, I don't know that I really have time for this, other than, like, you know, there's, like, 8 Saturdays a year when I have time for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and frankly, like, I would put 80% of the blame for that on the coaches. And that...
I think there's plenty of blame to go around.
There is. There is. But for me, this has been a poorly coached game for a long time. And now that the television landscape is such that you have to compete as an entertainment product with your opponents, the game is not capable of doing that. It's not fun to watch.
Yeah, well, and look, now, right, with the transfer portal, you know,
nobody stays anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. They're staying in college longer because of NIL money, but they're not necessarily staying at the same place. So it's really hard. Like, you know, I mean, look, just the NBA draft changed this whole thing a lot, right? Like the days of where you had a like a Duke team that would have, you know, a Bobby Hurley and a Christian Laettner that you'd watch for 4 years and a Grant Hill who was like the freshman, you know what I mean? That was like the young guy that you knew you'd be watching for 4 years after that, right?
Right.
Like those days are gone. And
totally gone.
And that, you know, had a major factor, I think, on the entertainment product. The coaches too, the rules some, the NBA's rules some, you know what I mean? Like all of that plays a part in sort of the destruction.
Yeah, it does. I just think
ball, I think, also has something to say as well. So
yeah, I just think the lion's share of the reason that the game itself is truly terrible to watch most of the time is like the lion's share of that falls on coaching, which has all like really been more about dynasty building than basketball. You know, it's just and like legacy building. Like this is what I mean, Jim Boeheim was running a 3-2 zone like last year. Like, come on, you guys.
Well, yeah, that stuff would work, right? Like nobody knew what to do with it when they would get to the tournament, right? That's why they had teams weirdly overperform in the tournament. But yeah, like all those guys, the dynasty building guys, got out once they realized this portal thing was happening. Like,
and right? And
Calipari is the only one left.
Well, some of them are around. Like Patino's here, just not relevant.
Patino doesn't count. He'd coach a team of 12-year-olds if it was on TV. You know what I mean? Like,
but I mean, you know, if you're talking about Krzyzewski, I think it's fair to say he just got old.
Not just talking about Krzyzewski. It's Krzyzewski. It's Boeheim. It's Roy Williams.
Yeah.
You know?
They were old.
Yeah, they're old, sure. But I think they also didn't want to deal. In the same way that Nick Saban didn't want to deal anymore.
That guy. So Nick Saban on a tour to prove that anything he said that felt like it was reasonable was just a recruiting effort, and he doesn't actually believe it.
Man can recruit, though. Yep. Can't take away from him.
Yep. But that whole, he gave a whole speech about how my wife used to love to have the prospects over for dinner so we could make empty promises to their moms. And she asked me, why are we even doing that now? They're just going where they can make the most money. Yeah, like they should be. Yeah. It's a job. Let them earn the money for the job. Come on.
College football is getting more and more like the Premier League, right? Because now you literally are buying the players.
Yeah.
And it really is. These teams are going to be the best teams.
But it's always been that to a very...
The two super leagues are going to have a massive advantage over the other teams. Like, it's all happening.
Yes, but the lie of college football is that it hasn't mostly always been like that. That's the lie. It's just been shady, and the kids were the ones who got in trouble when the shadiness got exposed. Yeah. Like, it's not worse. It's just different. Anyway, this is a whole other podcast, I think, that we could do about this.
Literally an entire other podcast. Let's do homework.
Let's do homework.
All right. We got, like I said, 3 weeks to get all this done, so don't be intimidated by the size of this
podcast. Don't rush, you know?
Yeah. But obviously Top Chef is coming back. We're going to watch a couple episodes of that. And Top Chef going to Wisconsin because they will literally go anywhere besides Atlanta. Apparently, I think they've proven that now.
At this point, just so that you don't have to get angry every time we talk about Top Chef, I wish they would go to Atlanta.
I wish they would just change the name to Fuck You Atlanta.
I don't think that would go over great.
With food. Fuck You Atlanta with food. All right. There's a movie. It's a movie, right? Called Blackberry.
Yes.
On Hulu.
Yeah. Starring, you know him as Dennis from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and his real name is
Glenn Howerton.
Glenn Howerton. That's it. Yes. Well done.
Thank you. But you can call him Dennis from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
I mean, that's what I call him, clearly.
See, Mac avoided that by kind of having his real name be Mac.
Yeah, that's true.
Now I'm thinking of the Wrexham song with
yeah, with Rob McElhenney.
Deadpool. All right, three.
Anyway, it's a movie about blackberries, and people say it's really excellent. So let's go.
We've watched lots of stuff about random tech companies, so why not one more?
Yeah.
Three Body Problem on Netflix. That's the Benioff and Weiss show, right? Halle Berry's in that.
Is she? I didn't even realize that. Yeah.
At least from the trailer,
it is Benioff and Weiss. Yes, and it's based on a book, a Chinese book, I believe. A fateful decision in 1960s China echoes across space and time.
Oh yeah, there's some Jonathan Pryce. Doing Jonathan Pryce things.
Mm-hmm. The lead is Benedict Wong, who some people will recognize from the Marvel Universe. I do not see Halle Berry on here.
Me neither. Me neither.
Maybe you're thinking of a different show.
Unless this is just a person who looks like Halle Berry. Yeah, maybe that's it. I don't know. She might not be in it. Take it back. Take it back.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Brad is an executive producer of this, so but not he's involved, but not actually in it. Okay. One of the Game of Thrones dudes, the Maester guy is in it. Sam.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So we're gonna watch that, and then there's a remake of Roadhouse with Jake Gyllenhaal. I'm pretty sure Jake Gyllenhaal's in that.
Yep. That one you're right about. That one I can confirm. Yep, you are correct. Jake Gyllenhaal is in the Jake Gyllenhaal remake of Roadhouse.
And I already forgot what Palm Royale is.
Palm Royale is an upcoming streaming show with Kristen Wiig and Allison Janney and a variety of other actors and actresses that we very much enjoy. It takes place at like a... I thought hotel, but maybe it's just the pools of Palm Beach in the late 60s. And Kristen Wiig is trying to earn her way into Palm Beach high society.
Okay. And that is on Apple.
Apple TV Plus, yes.
All right, so there you go. That is your homework. Top Chef, Blackberry, Three Body Problem, Roadhouse, and Palm Royale. And we will talk in 3 weeks.
Yeah, man. I'll talk to you then.
But we'll talk publicly with people in 3 weeks.
Can't wait. Bye.
The steam's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.